You are an energetic being first and foremost, so the quality of your energy field is really important. It works like a filter, each part of the field enabling or preventing whatever is turning up in your life. This is the Future Self Energetics Show. I'm your host, Amanda Nelson, and I work in the body, mind and spirits community. I'm an award-winning master energist. That's a therapist that specializes in improving the quality of the energy fields that move in, through and around your body. If you want anything in your life to change, you have to begin with changing your energy field first. So my shows are a mixture of talk and therapy ideas, interviews and thought-provoking inspiration. They're all about energy, energy fields, protection and connection. If there's a topic you'd love me to cover in my show, please email me, amanda@futureselfenergetics.com. And if you love the show here on UK Health Radio, please spread the word about it in your networks. Here we are in December, moving deeper into the darker half of the year here in the Northern Hemisphere. The winter solstice on the 21st is approaching fast, and with it comes all those traditions that we know and love. But how often do you stop to think about where these traditions actually originated? What did they mean to the people who first created and then chose to celebrate them? Perhaps when you know the roots of your traditions, you can put your own unique spin on them as well. You can make them truly yours and share them with others. My name's Amanda Nelson, and this is the Future Self Energetics Show on UK Health Radio. And today on my show, I'm going to be exploring three of my most beloved Yuletide traditions, those being songs, decorations and gifting. And I wanted to share the ancient origins with you, show you how they've evolved over time, and perhaps inspire you to then create in a way that feels authentic and meaningful to you and your family, so that the celebration feels deeper for you. Because when we understand why we celebrate, why we have traditions that we do, well, it becomes so much richer, wouldn't you agree? So let's dive straight in. Music. Well, I was in Reading today shopping, and the songs are everywhere, aren't they? In the shops, on the radio, they're humming away in the back of our minds even now. And by mid-December, we've usually heard Mariah Carey tell us what she wants for Christmas at least 47 times. And we love these songs, and then we grow tired of these songs, and then we take 11 months off, and then come next December, we can't wait to hear those songs all over again. My heart goes out to all those men and women that work in the shops and the bars and the restaurants, because from the moment the doors open in the morning to the last minute before the till closes down at night, they're going to hear those happy, chirpy, festive songs on repeat. Now, I'm allowed to comment on that because back in the day when I was a young woman working in a retail shop in Brighton, some of the songs drove me almost demented by the time the festive season drew to a close. Now, that isn't my earliest memory of music at Christmas, though. From nursery school age, we all learned the songs of Away in a Manger or O Little Town of Bethlehem and all the other favourites. And around the age of 6 or 7, I can remember going from doorstep to doorstep in my local neighbourhood to raise money for charity. We were collecting for Dr. Bernardo's, my favourite children's charity back then at that time. Dr. Bernardo's helped to transform the lives of the most vulnerable children and young people in the UK. Children that I had always been told were much less fortunate than I was. And so the collection box that we had, well, and I got to hold it with my little chilly hands, was designed to look like a tiny house. I think it must have been made out of something like papier-mâché, actually, and painted up. And I'd go out with my parents and some of my friends, and we would sing to the best of our ability, traditional Christmas carols on our neighbours' doorsteps. And we'd sing all the favourites like Away in a Manger and Jingle Bells and Silent Night, and all we expected in return for a few songs sung on those cold doorsteps were a few pennies dropped into the slit in the roof of that house-shaped donations box. And if we were lucky, we might get an occasional mince pie as well if they were offered, and also if our mum and dad said it was okay to have one. What I didn't know back then was that carolling actually originated long before Christian traditions. It came from the pre-Christian practice of wassailing. All the villagers would group together back then as a crowd, and they'd walk through the local fields and the local orchards in the middle of winter, and they would sing. Actually, they didn't only sing, sometimes they would even shout, making a huge amount of noise. Why did they do this? Well, to drive away any spirits that might get in the way of abundant crops in the following year, of course. Wassailing was intended to drive away anything that might prevent the new growth from flourishing and producing food and nourishment in abundance the year ahead. That rebirth theme, that resurrection theme, is really common in most traditional belief systems, promising reassuringly that although everything seems to have gone, it hadn't really, and it would soon be brought back to life again. In the depths of winter, it does seem that nature has died. The trees are mostly bare, the ground is pretty cold, if not frozen, and the days they do feel short and increasingly dark. All that remained was to wait then for Mother Nature to be fully restored, hope she came back to us all and returned to her former glory, and then all would be well and plentiful again. Wassailing. Like many traditions, though, wassailing itself changed over time and transformed into what became known as carolling, going from door to door singing to the health of your neighbours instead. As the song lyrics go, good tidings we bring to you and your kin. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Songs of praise were around for centuries, though, before carolling began formally in churches. And from what I can see, based on records, carolling at Yule was a relatively new tradition, only really starting in the 1200s. Now here we are in the 21st century, and we have an abundance of streaming services and music downloads, all forms of media that bring those songs to us around the clock from as early as November onwards. Very few carol singers, though, nowadays. I'll never forget, actually, how cold my hands and feet felt by the time we finally returned home from our carol singing. I bet I was only out for less than an hour, but my tiny fingers still ended up almost purple and itchy with the cold. And I've shared this story many times before. We would go out carol singing, and there was always the tradition that there would be a plentiful supply of piping hot Heinz tomato soup waiting for us to drink when we arrived back at my grandmother's house later in the evening. And once our boots and coats had been put away, and once we were warmed up properly again, it was time to gather around the old wooden kitchen table and count up all of the donations that we'd received in that little house-shaped Barnardo's box. And we'd write down the total on a scrap of paper, ready to be taken to the bank. And as my grandmother would remind us, it would be sent off to the children who were not as fortunate as we were. So here's my question for you this year. How might you bring some song into your celebrations in a way that feels truly meaningful for you, especially if the music around feels a bit hollow or shallow, or you've heard it so many times before? Perhaps you could gather friends or family together and actually sing it together. Not perfectly, just joyfully. And perhaps you could choose songs that actually mean something to you rather than just what's playing as you walk up and down the aisles in the supermarkets. Or perhaps you could go out caroling again, raising money for a good cause that you care about, just as we did all of those years ago. The tradition of singing, of caroling, of wassailing is yours to shape. I have been reading carols out aloud rather than singing them, reciting them almost as poetry, and putting an earnest, loving twist to them as I speak the lines. Good tidings I bring to you and your kin. I wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
This is the Future Self Energetic Show for UK Health Radio. I'm your host, Amanda Nelson, and we're exploring the roots of Yuletide traditions together today and how, perhaps, you can then take them, adapt them, and make them your own. Decorating your home to mark an event is still a massive part of any celebration nowadays, isn't it? Our local garden centre, though, has had a fully stocked hall of Christmas decorations since the beginning of September. You would think that what they sold at that garden centre was Christmas decorations to grow. And I have to say that I think it takes a lot of the magic away for me, especially too for the children in some ways, because they see those decorations for such a long time before the day itself actually arrives. When I was little, our decorations at home didn't go up until about a week before Christmas Day, and they disappeared overnight just as quickly by the 4th of January. And I recall how plain the house always looked after all the decorations had been taken down and put away. But there was something really special about that briefest of time when the house felt like it sparkled. You can never have too much sparkle. Decorating your home with greenery from outside would have been a way to honour the gods and goddesses of nature throughout the winter time. Small trees, plants, wreaths, garlands and boughs were cut and then were brought inside to decorate the homes. When most of the world around them had turned brown and grey and a bit dreary and bare outside, these evergreens were brought inside the house and made everyone feel better again. And this also dates back before history books were written. Imagine how cold and bleak the winter nights must have been, let's say 1,000 years ago or more. And I'm not surprised that evergreen greenery was brought into the house. It would add beautiful scent, it would bring in colour, and it would really lift your spirits and bring in that cheer. And they'd remind whoever the occupants of the house were that spring would return again. My mum, she used to get long swathes of fresh ivy, branches of fir, sprigs of holly with real red berries on them. Dad was always told, only bring back holly if it's got the red berries on them. And into the house they would all come and up they would go to decorate the mantel and the banisters and over the doors. I don't tend to raid my holly trees, the ones that are growing in my front garden, as I realise that's where my ladybirds, I call them my ladybirds, they're not really mine, but you know what I mean, as that's where the ladybirds for my garden seem to overwinter under their prickly leaves. And I let them have a good rest. I don't want to bother the ladybirds because they work hard for me. They keep the aphid populations and the black fly and everything way, way down when I plant my vegetable patch. But holly sprigs are still popular, aren't they, as motifs on cards and jumpers and in little branches or as a part of a wreath at the front door. I've even seen women wearing earrings and pendants that look like sprigs of holly, and that's great fun. But did you know that in times long past, holly was significant? It was considered to be the wood of choice to drive off evil spirits. It was essential to have it in every household during the darker half of the year, when most of the other trees were bare and the spirits would be at liberty to wander about the place. The holly bush is associated with the gods of winter. In pre-Christian pagan cultures, holly was associated with the Holly King, the god of winter, and he was doing his annual battle with the Oak King of summer. For Christians, the red holly berries represent the blood of the Christ as he died upon the cross, and the sharp-edged green leaves are associated with his crown of thorns. Same plant, different stories about it, all honouring something sacred about holly. The Romans loved to honour the god Saturn in December, and so their homes and hearths were decorated with boughs of greenery, vines, ivy and the like. The ancient Egyptians used palm leaves from palm trees to mark the winter solstice. The palm tree was their symbol of resurrection and rebirth. We also include mistletoe in our celebrations, and it's actually one of the oldest and most established of traditions. Mistletoe, it's an evergreen plant covered in pearl-sized white berries from winter to spring. And if you look up into the branches of tall trees, you can often see balls of spindly mistletoe hanging in them. They look like natural Christmas baubles amongst the highest branches. Now, the Druids, who were the Celtic priests, they'd cut the mistletoe that grew on oak trees and they'd give it to people as a blessing. And oaks were seen as sacred, and the winter fruit of the mistletoe was a symbol of life in the darker winter months. What a combination! Druids, Vikings, Romans, they've all used mistletoe to honour fertility rites of different kinds. And there's tales from the North folk of warriors from opposing tribes who would meet under the mistletoe and choose to lay down their arms. It's been considered a plant of peace, of reconciliation. I wonder if that's why we developed the tradition of a cheeky kiss under the mistletoe. It's very magical even now. So bringing greenery inside the home during the winter solstice is nothing new. So how can you make it your own? What if this year, instead of buying plastic baubles and mass-produced decorations, you went out into nature? What if you gathered your own holly, your own ivy, your own pine branches? What if you made wreaths with your own hands or created decorations from things that you have found or foraged? You'll need gloves and a good pair of secateurs, and I suspect permission from whoever owns the land if you would like to take some of those things. But there's usually abundant resources if you make an effort to find them and you ask permission to be able to take them. This year, I'm going to make bauble-like bird feeders, and taking inspiration from the mistletoe in those high tall trees, I'm going to create balls of bird feeding decorations. I'm going to put them in my buddleia bush branches in my front garden. And I thought that might look quite cool, a buddleia bush with bauble-like bird feeders as a symbolic Christmas tree of sorts. But how lovely really for the birds that hang out there during the summer to have some Christmas cheer given to them by me in the middle of winter. Baubles of bird food hanging from the branches, helping the wildlife through winter while decorating my garden. I hope it inspires passers-by to do the same.
UK House Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
This is the Future Self Energetic Show for UK Health Radio. I'm your host, Amanda Nelson, and today on the show we've been exploring the ancient roots of Yuletide traditions and how you can adapt and build on those traditions to make them very much your own. Christmas in the modern Western world feels to me like a bit of a gift-giving event. It benefits retailers and it benefits the economy to a degree, and that's absolutely fine. And I think when children are small, the excitement of all the gifts, giving them, receiving them, well, it's just electric, isn't it? But I do think, as the years have rolled by for me, I feel there's a certain amount of frenzied purchasing that's becoming a bit lost on me now. Now, I'm in no way bar humbug, I promise you that. But back in the day, when I had three small children who had absolutely no idea of how much something cost or the availability of it, I'll admit it did feel like that gift giving was a bit of a burden at times. I know it can be fun, gifting, but it can also feel, for some people, like a huge weight on your shoulders. I've got a bit of a problem now then with the levels of pressure that's placed on anyone in order to buy the right kind of gift, buy lots of gifts. Not because I'm against gifting, but because the pressure sucks the fun out of it sometimes. My inner circle of friends, they shy away from the overly commercial side of Christmas as well. Perhaps it's something to do with our age. It certainly makes it much easier now that the children are older and you can actually talk to them or set a budget, for example, for gifts that you want to share. Again, I'm not being bah humbug at all. It's just that to me, well, it all went a bit far and the gift of Christmas was lost amongst the gifts that we gave one another. The expectation, the hype, the pressure to deliver, the frenzy of it at times. And as my children turned into adults, the fabulous adults, my kids, I managed to free myself and I'm hoping to free them from this side of Christmas. I reinvented little bits about how I wanted to give and to receive gifts. And I now actively encourage everyone to always include something that they have made themselves as one of those gifts. I'm in the middle at the moment of decorating jars of jams and homemade mincemeats and chutneys that I have made during the autumn months. Lots of jars of piccalilli, lots of jars of abundant cranberry sauce. Not together, of course, I mean two separate jars. But this year, no blackcurrant vodka, no sloe gin, but instead I'm gifting small bottles of a rather pokey fire cider that I've made, perfect for an adult stocking. These homemade treasures, they seem to go down really, really well, and they've inspired my children, friends and extended family to starting to always include something that they have made. In fact, sometimes people give me only things that they have made, and the thought and the time is not wasted on me. I understand how long and how much effort goes into making some of the things that they share. And it's lovely to hear that people enjoyed the gifts that I have given them so much that what they do is now that when I say, can I get you something for Christmas? They always say, well, I'd love a jar of your piccalilli, Amanda, or maybe if you've got some spare sloe gin going, I'll have a bottle of that again this year. It's really nice. Gift giving, as we know it, is actually quite a new practice, though. It was developed with only, the last 200 or 300 years. So it is relatively new. The biblical tale of three wise men who came with gifts of gold, frankincense and myrrh for the newborn baby Jesus. The Romans, they gave gifts between Saturnalia and the Calends. During the Middle Ages, French nuns gave gifts of food and clothing to the poor on St. Nicholas Eve. But it was only, around the early 1800s that most people exchanged gifts. And when they did, it seemed to be on New Year's Day. And it was typically just the one present. I'm hoping that that's correct. I'm happy to be corrected on it. But from my research, it seems that it was the very early 1800s when the practice of gift giving actually started between family and friends. Now, when I was a child, the very most you would ever expect to receive in your Christmas stocking on Christmas morning was one small main gift and about five much smaller treats. So those five smaller ones would include things like a small selection box of, say, four or five different chocolate bars, or there'd be a fresh orange. Yeah, a fresh orange. Imagine that. And perhaps if you were lucky, there would be a hardback annual of your favourite comic. And of course, as we got older, we all received a Guinness Book of Records at some point. I was brought up to believe that you should always arrive at somebody's home with a gift, but not only during the festive season, any time of the year really. It's not only homemade preserves that might show up though. It could be some incense sticks that I think you might like that I picked up when I was last in Glastonbury, or a bunch of fresh flowers from my garden. perhaps a bottle of homemade wine or two. Watch out for that. One of the oldest gifts that's been shared is actually the humble fruitcake. And I also make fruitcakes as well, although I try to make fruitcakes without using flour in it. And where possible, I also try and make fruitcakes vegan as well. It's quite the challenge, but I have managed to do it. So fruitcakes have their origins in ancient Egypt. There's a tale in the culinary world that the Egyptians used to place cakes made of fermented fruit and honey on the tombs of their deceased loved ones. Presumably, these cakes would then last as long as the pyramids themselves. And in later centuries, Roman soldiers, they would carry fruitcakes into battle, made with mashed pomegranates and barley. There are even records of soldiers on the Crusades carrying honey-laden fruitcakes into the Holy Land with them. So fruitcakes are great, they're lovely and tasty, and they last and last. That would have been wonderful as a gift, wouldn't it? A wonderful store cupboard treat made to add something sweet and welcoming to the table throughout the coldest of winters. And it would last throughout the coldest of winters, though possibly not in my house, because in my house, fruitcake does not last long at all. Fruitcake was, though, a store cupboard staple, and it still is. It's a reliable addition to keep the wintry famines at bay. So here's what I'd like to suggest. This year, I invite you to make something. It doesn't have to be fruitcake. Bake something. My daughter, actually, she always bakes a massive batch of the most delicious vegan chocolate orange cookies. She's quite an amazing cook. Actually, she's more of a chef than a cook, I think. I like to rustle up something like sloe gin, as I've mentioned, or sometimes something a bit more oddball like flat fire cider. I also use some of the chilies from my greenhouse, the ones that I can't eat because they end up as being too hot. I make hot honey with them, and I have some steeping as we speak in my larder cupboard. I make chutney, I make jam. And in the past, I've also done things which haven't involved me cooking anything. Perhaps if I had a day out somewhere with someone, I'd collect little mementos of that day or day trips that we shared together. And then at Christmas time, I would create them as a tiny collage and then present them to the person I spent those happy hours with. And it's lovely, as each thing, whether it's an entry ticket or a small dried flower from a flower garden or a pack of seeds that we actually got, even the packaging that goes from some sugar or some a pot of tea that we actually shared together. In that collage, that sort of giftedness means so much more, I think, than anything that you could buy from the shops. And of course, you sit down, don't you, and you go through things like that. You go, oh yeah, I remember that tea, it was so good. Oh, and there was that flower bed full of those violets that were so gorgeous. And it brings the memory back. What happens is these kinds of gifts carry a piece of you with them. You share a gift of yourself with that person. And I think that one of the things that I've tried to convey today are many different kinds of things that you can do to celebrate Christmas. One thing I would like to introduce, though, is the idea, though, of a completely different kind of gift, the gift of storytelling. I've shared a number of stories with you today, and those stories are things that are really meaningful and true for me, and I wanted you to know about them. I wish we were in a room so I could invite you to share some of your stories. Did you go carol singing? Did you get cold hands? Did you end up drinking hot tomato soup at your grandmother's house? One of the oldest traditions of all, perhaps the very oldest, I suppose, is the tradition of gathering together during the darker times of the year and sharing stories Our ancestors, they'd sit around fires through the long winter nights and tell tales to one another, and they'd share memories of where they'd been and stories of the ancestors, hopes for wherever they were going next, and they'd pass down lived wisdom and laughter and tears, and they'd tighten the weave in the fabric of family and community with their words. The tradition of storytelling and the gathering together, it's a gift we can still give. In fact, it might be, arguably, the most important gift of all at Yule. When you invite someone to sit at a table with you, and when you make space for them in your home, when you listen to their story, where you share your own story, where you are giving them gifts of being seen and also giving them the gift of receiving whatever tales you wish to share. Well, it's a way of belonging, isn't it? The gift of belonging. I love to sit and share family stories with my children. They have heard these same stories 1,000 times. And yet, even though my children are that little bit older now, they still ask for me to tell them the story of way back when daring do and daring don't were very much a part of their lives. And we remind ourselves of crazy stuff like our pets, the sorts of things our pets did. Now all together in heaven, except for one likely not if I'm honest, but the children, they still laugh out loud when we talk about these long lost pets, remembering happy times and the clowning about that the pets used to do. We live in a world now where it's easy to feel really disconnected. Some people can go days without meaningful conversation. Think of that. And we can scroll through hundreds of images of other people's lives without really truly connecting with a single one of them. But when we gather intentionally, when we sit together and invite the sharing of those precious stories, we remember who we are as a community. And there's a gift in that. These gifts connect us to our ancestors and our roots, and they connect us to each other in this moment, and they connect us to our combined future. The stories we tell today, of course, they could become the memories of tomorrow. And I use this time also to introduce my children and reintroduce them to the ancestors that I knew, but that had passed away before they arrived. And I tell them the stories that I was told of the ancestors who had passed away when I was a child. So as we move towards the winter solstice this year, as we move through these dark days towards the return of the light, I'd encourage you to think about the gifts you're giving. Yes, make something beautiful with your hands if you can, but also give the gift of your presence, give the gift of your attention, the gift of your stories. Gather the people you love around you, light some candles around them, bring in some holly and mistletoe, make something delicious, maybe sing a few songs, and then tell each other some stories. Just remind one another of happy shared times together and how much you all mean to one another. That's it for another show this week. I'm thrilled that you dropped by. I present Future Self Energetic Show every week for UK Health Radio, and I'd be delighted to spend more time with you next week, so do tune in. The world of energy is amazing, and it's magical, and it's mysterious, and there's always so much for us to explore about it. You have a vital connection to a web of energy fields around you. Use that connection for your benefit. I've been working with vibrational energetics all my life, and I know that when you improve your energy field, you can uplevel any part of your life.